Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. The kickoff of the Tokyo Olympic Games is around the corner and will take place amid high COVID infections and worry from the Japanese public and the medical establishment there. There are also concerns about the increasing cost of hosting the Games. Given these challenges, could it be time to consider giving the Olympics a permanent home in Greece rather than rotating the Games to a different city every 4 years? That's the question that Paul Glastris, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly and an early advocate of moving the Olympics to Greece on a permanent basis, raises in a recent interview with The Greek Reporter. Paul Glastris joins our podcast to break this issue down for us. Paul, welcome onto The Greek Current.
Thank you, Thanos. Great to be here.
In 2016, on the eve of the Rio Olympics, you argued in the Washington Post and in the Washington Monthly in favor of bringing the Olympics permanently to Greece. In light of the current challenges facing the planners of the Tokyo Games, do you still think this is once again a good time to make the case to give the Olympics a permanent home in Greece?
I do, and I'm delighted that you're doing this broadcast. And the Greek Reporter also did a fine piece on exactly this subject that I really urge your listeners to go read. Look, it's crazy that we move the Olympics every 4 years. It makes no sense. It's never made any sense. It is an invitation to corruption. It's risky and it's insanely wasteful. And every practical consideration that I can think of and most people can think of is that you should keep it in one place. Look, the Olympics was in the Peloponnese for 1,000 years. They didn't move it around to, you know, Athens or Syracuse. They kept it in one place. That made sense. Look, the reason they move it around every year is that the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, the founder of it, having done the first one in Athens in 1896, I think, decided that the second one ought to be in his native Paris. And it's moved around ever since. And that gives the people who run the IOC tremendous power and clout, and they can make money and they can, you know, have dinners free and become big wheels around the world. But it doesn't make any sense. And now is a very good time to make that argument.
In that interview that you brought up in the Greek Reporter last week, you talked about what has changed since you initially advocated for moving the Olympics to Greece, which was actually a piece that you wrote, and it was in the midst of the financial crisis in Greece. Is Greece in a stronger position today to make the case for such a move?
I think so. You know, the main thing that's changed since 2016 is Greece's more secure role as a regional player and partner with the United States and a lot of its other regional countries, Israel, some of the Arab countries, France, and all of which is more or less been made possible by the decline of reliability and the sort of threats posed by Turkey, as well as the collapse of Syria. So Greece has bought a lot of goodwill in a lot of capitals, including the United States. And I, you know, whether that capital can be used to change some minds within the IOC and around the IOC, I don't know. But it, as I said to the Greek Reporter, it certainly doesn't hurt.
As a result of the pandemic, the Tokyo Games have already run around $3 billion over budget. And every 4 years, the Olympics always seem to come with this massive financial burden for host cities. And Athens is no stranger to this as a result of the 2004 Games. NPR also recently featured a discussion with Professor Jules Boykoff of Pacific University, author of 4 books on the Olympics, about the dark side of hosting Olympic Games. How would hosting the Olympics permanently in one spot, such as Greece, help solve a number of problems, particularly on the financial side?
Well, on the financial side, there's two problems. There's the cost overruns that you mentioned. Anybody who's tried to refurbish their house knows the problem. Unexpected things come up that you didn't budget for. Contractors are not always, their interests are not always aligned with, you know, yours. And cost overruns are a problem in any endeavor, but ones with very tight deadlines, which are the Olympics, even more so. These are enormously complicated events to pull off. One person once described it as like starting up a Fortune 500 company from scratch in a couple of years and then dismantling it. So there's the cost overruns. And then there's just the infrastructure that needs to be built, much of which or at least some of which will never be used again. You know, there's beautiful facilities in Athens that were built for the 2004 Olympics that, as we all know, lay in, you know, kind of are disintegrating. Some of them house some refugees, but a lot of them are just empty. And Greece hasn't had the money to keep them, you know, necessarily maintained, but also doesn't have much use for some of them. And most host cities have to build something. Now, some of that infrastructure is useful if you're augmenting your subway, as Greece did. That is an investment that pays off over time, but some of it isn't. So when you keep the Olympics in one place, you're amortizing that infrastructure. You don't have to rebuild the stadiums and the hotels and the training facilities. They're there. They get used every 4 years. Your investment pays off. So yeah, that's just sort of the more obvious advantages of keeping it in one place. But there are others too we can talk about.
Yeah, one of them that you bring up in your pieces from 2016 and in the interview with the Greek Reporter is that issue of wasted human capital and talent that follows the Olympic Games. Can you elaborate on this?
Absolutely. So as I said, the putting all together of these games is an enormous undertaking, and a lot of training goes into it, a lot of preparation. Technologists, contractors, managers, volunteers, EMTs, all have to learn, practice to do their jobs. And then when the inevitable event itself happens and you realize you know, the training only got you so far and you make mistakes, a lot of mass learning goes on within a city or a country that then, if you don't utilize that learning 4 years hence, goes to utter waste, right? And the next city gets to make its rookie mistakes. That is not only a waste of human capital, but it's also dangerous, right? Because let's hope the Tokyo Olympics go well. They've already had some unexpected things happen, including having to, because of COVID, not have audiences. But, you know, we've seen very, very dangerous things happen in the past in Olympics. And the more you have a trained workforce and practice systems, the lower the risk.
Paul, the IOC effectively controls the bidding process. And in the past, cities and countries have competed almost as hard as athletes do in the Olympics in order to win bids to host the games. And this power has also led to issues of corruption. And we've also seen authoritarian countries host games. How pervasive is this problem of corruption within the IOC? And do you see moving the games to Greece as a way that we can also tackle this issue?
Absolutely. Most of the corruption happens because of the bidding process. You know, the IOC claims to have really ratcheted up protections against the corruption. We haven't had in recent years the scandals quite to the extent we had, you know, for instance, in the Salt Lake City Olympics. But, you know, you still hear about it. There's still a lot of rumblings about it and things we're probably not seeing. And look, there are cities and countries that took themselves out of the running to host the games because of the behavior of the IOC. I think in Norway, the IOC was demanding dedicated highway lanes for IOC officials. And the Norwegians just said, you know what? No. The city of Boston took itself out of the running for the 2024 Summer Games because they impaneled some experts to look at the cost and said that there was literally no way they could pay off the debts that they would incur to host the game unless they could have the game every year, every 4 years, which of course they can. So I think more and more countries are wisening up to the fact that this is not a good deal economically. But other countries, for a variety of political and other reasons, are willing to step up, as Tokyo was. But, you know, as more sensible democratic places say no, I'm sure the authoritarian places will say yes. And you can imagine the Olympics bouncing around from one tin pot dictatorship to another.
Given everything that we've discussed, what would you say is the biggest obstacle to getting something like this done?
Well, the IOC by far is the biggest obstacle. You know, they are a power, a government unto themselves. And I'm sure there are things that, you know, the United States, the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, other international players could do to change their calculus. But this does come down to the IOC. So there would have to be a lot of political pressure. and maybe the incentives would have to change. But I think the other big hurdle is, at least as I understand it, there's really not a lot of political appetite within Greece, or at least within the Greek's political class, to bring the Olympics back, to lobby to have the Olympics permanently, or at least the Summer Olympics permanently in Greece. And look, I think it's a good idea. You might think it's a good idea. Lots of people think it's a good idea. Certainly Greeks that I know in the States, I haven't met a one that doesn't think it's a good idea. But, you know, if none of the parties make that a top item, if the newspapers aren't crusading on it, et cetera, it certainly isn't going to happen.
Paul, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great chatting with you.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
In other news, Cyprus reported 1,081 new COVID-19 cases on Tuesday as government officials and experts called on the public to be vigilant. Cyprus's coronavirus cases have exceeded 6,500 in the past 2 weeks, with over 850 infections reported on average every day. Although 55% of Cyprus's population is now fully vaccinated, vaccination rates among young people remain low. The rise in COVID-19 infections and the low rate of vaccination among young people aged 18 to 30 has prompted the government to adopt new measures aimed at promoting and accelerating its vaccination rollout, especially among young adults. Finally, the amount of migrants and asylum seekers who've died when attempting to reach Europe has doubled from last year's first semester, according to a report from the International Organization for Migration. At least 1,146 people perished between January and June, while the number of people attempting to cross the Mediterranean to Europe increased by 58%. Reasons for the increase of deaths include unstable boats trying to cross the sea. Another cause, according to a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration, was the absence of proactive European state-led search and rescue operations in international waters combined with restrictions on NGOs. The IOM says the actual number of deaths may be far higher as many shipwrecks go unreported and others are hard to verify. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.